You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
Hello, Doc.
Good afternoon, Peace, and good afternoon to all our listeners out there. I hope everybody had a restful and relaxing weekend, and we're back out today to learn something new about our health. So today's topic is going to be centered around cholesterol, because many people know that maybe they have high cholesterol. Maybe they don't know what the cholesterol panel is broken down into. So we're going to learn about the different types of cholesterol, what each one pertains to, and if it puts you at risk for anything. So while we are going to be talking about a specific topic, anybody can feel free to call in or send a WhatsApp on any of their medical questions, and we can have a conversation surrounding those as well.
All right. Yes, of course. Like the doctor said, we will be taking some time out to answer any of your medical questions during our topic today. Right. So remember our numbers, 625-2257, 627-3223. And of course, you could also WhatsApp us at 306-1065. You can also message our friends on Sky 99.5 and Sangit 106.1, and they will send messages to us right here in studio. So what exactly is cholesterol, and why do so many people misunderstand it?
So the thing about cholesterol is it is a fat-like substance that your body actually uses to build your cell membranes. So we have millions and trillions of cells in our bodies, and each one of those cells is surrounded by a membrane, and that membrane is called the phospholipid bilayer, and that is made of cholesterol. Now, cholesterol is not just for building those cell membranes. It also makes the hormones like the estrogen and the testosterone. It produces bile acids that help you digest fats as well. Most cholesterol is made in the liver, and some will also come from food that we consume. And because cholesterol is not something that dissolves in the blood, it is actually carried around in little packages, which we term lipoproteins, and that is mainly LDL, the low-density lipoprotein, and HDL, the high-density lipoprotein. And this is usually where that confusion starts. People hear the term cholesterol and assume it is one single thing, when in reality, it is a whole system of particles and patterns that influence your risk differently. A major misunderstanding that many people have is thinking that cholesterol in general is bad and you need to eliminate it completely. And of course, that is, like I said, a big misunderstanding that we have, because your body actually needs cholesterol to live. The real issue comes from how much, what type, and how that cholesterol behaves in your bloodstream over time. Many people tend to assume that cholesterol alone is what explains heart disease. Heart disease is more like you having a perfect storm happening in the body. Cholesterol, inflammation, blood pressure, smoking, diabetes, genetics, all of these different things and activities interact to cause heart disease. So cholesterol matters a lot, but it is one piece of the risk puzzle. It is not the entire story.
All right, folks, of course, once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Our topic today, cholesterol. And if someone is told their cholesterol is normal, does this automatically mean their heart is healthy?
So not automatically. Normal cholesterol results is reassuring, but it is not a guarantee of safety. Now, many of the standard labs that we have, they will report on your total cholesterol and your LDL, but your cardiovascular risk is influenced by so much more than that. We have to look at blood pressure, blood sugar, triglycerides, your waist circumference, smoking, family history, even your age. So somebody can have normal cholesterol, but still have early plaque building in their arteries, especially if they have long-term inflammation or insulin resistance. One reason that this happens is that when we hear that term normal, it can refer to a wide range, and it is often based on population averages, not necessarily what is optimized for a person's personal risk. And many people believe that if their cholesterol is fine or if their cholesterol is normal, they can still just eat anything that they want. But that is very risky thinking. For example, if you have other risk factors like high blood pressure, diabetes, a strong family history of heart disease, and you are a smoker, your doctor is still going to treat you very aggressively, even if your cholesterol looks decent, because the goal is preventing a first event, not reacting after a heart attack or stroke has already happened.
And why do we still see the heart attacks in people who were told their cholesterol is fine?
Because, like I said, heart attacks don't happen from cholesterol alone. They happen from artery plaque that builds silently over years and then becomes unstable. Now, plaque is a mix of cholesterol, inflammatory cells, and even scar tissue inside of the artery walls. So, even if your cholesterol numbers look okay at one point in time, a person may have had years of exposure to higher levels earlier, or they may have other drivers like the high blood pressure and the diabetes and the smoking that damage the artery lining and make plaque more likely to form. And another key point is that some people even have hidden risks that are not captured in a basic lipid panel. For example, higher numbers of cholesterol-carrying particles, which are like the apolipoprotein B or elevated lipoprotein A, which is more of a genetic cholesterol-related factor, or even significant insulin resistance with normal LDL levels. Now, sometimes we do not see those little factors on in normal cholesterol levels, and that's why we call them hidden risks, because we don't always look for the ApoB or the lipoprotein A on a general panel. And many people think that because they're young or they're slim or athletic, that it makes them immune to high cholesterol. You can very much look fit on the outside and still have risk on the inside, especially with genetics, with smoking or vaping, sleep apnea, or uncontrolled stress. And that is why your risk is best assessed with having the whole picture and not just focusing on one lab value.
And is total cholesterol the most important number, or are there other markers we should be paying attention to?
I would say that total cholesterol is actually the least specific number, and on its own, it can be misleading. So, total cholesterol combines LDL, HDL, and part of triglycerides. So a person can have high total cholesterol because their HDL is high, which can be protective, or they can have normal total cholesterol but still have risky LDL patterns. So in normal practice, we look more carefully at the low density lipoproteins and the non HDL cholesterol, which includes all of the atherogenic or the plaque-forming particles. We also look at the triglycerides, and we also have to look at the overall context of the situation. And even better, in some cases, we can add the apolipoprotein B, which is a measurement that estimates the number of plaque-forming particles, and the lipoprotein A, which is largely genetic and can raise your risk even when your LDL looks normal. Non-HDL cholesterol or non-good cholesterol is a simple useful marker because it captures that LDL or bad cholesterol plus other plaque-forming particles, and it is especially helpful when triglycerides are elevated. Now, many people tend to think that having good HDL or the good cholesterol is a free pass. Now, extremely high HDL does not automatically cancel out the high LDL. And in some situations, that high HDL may not even be protective. So the goal is to interpret the pattern and not just worship one number from the panel itself.
And one more question before we go to our calls and messages. What's the difference between LDL, HDL, and triglycerides, and which one should people worry about the most?
So LDL is often called the bad cholesterol because it delivers cholesterol to the tissues. And when LDL particles get into the walls of the arteries, they can contribute to plaque formation. Now, HDL is called the good cholesterol because it helps to transport cholesterol away from the tissues and back to the liver. Triglycerides are another type of blood fat that essentially reflects how your body handles energy, and that is often influenced by your diet, especially if you have a diet that is in excess of refined carbs and alcohol, and it is often influenced by a person if a person has insulin resistance, as well as their overall metabolic health. And all three of these factors matter, but they matter differently. So in terms of plaque formation, LDL, and especially the apolipoprotein B particle number, is often the biggest long-term driver, particularly when that remains elevated for a number of years. The triglycerides are a strong red flag for metabolic risk. So if you have high triglycerides, that will often point to somebody who has insulin resistance, and that is something that can travel with low HDL, fatty liver, and increases a person's cardiovascular risk as well. Many people, like I mentioned before, think that HDL automatically cancels out the LDL, but that is not a reliable fact. A high HDL does not erase the plaque-forming effect of high LDL. So the safest approach is really to keep it balanced. Keep the LDL and the apolipoprotein B controlled, the triglycerides healthy, and focus on lifestyle pillars that improve your entire profile.
All right, folks, let's go to our calls and questions from you, right, on any medical topic. 625-2257. Saw some calls coming in. Do call us back. 627-3223. Message our friends at Sangeet Sky. They will send you messages right to us. Or you can message us directly at 306-1065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean. All right, let's get this question here. Good afternoon, Dr. Dean. Can cholesterol build up in the liver, causing fatty liver?
So when, remember I said that, first of all, cholesterol is actually produced by the liver itself. And cholesterol can actually build up in the liver in excess of what it is supposed to produce. Now, it is the body's central cholesterol processing organ. So it does make cholesterol and it clears it from the blood and packages it into the HDL and the LDL. And it excretes that excess cholesterol into the bile. Now, when you consume too many calories, especially refined carbs, sugars, alcohol, the liver converts that excess into fat and cholesterol. And over time, that cholesterol can accumulate into your liver cells. So you can get non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. You can get metabolic syndrome. You can even just get obesity, and even genetic lipid disorders all contribute to the buildup of excess fat in the liver.
Another question here. What's the best statin to remove it?
So when we're looking at statins, there are different types of statins, and of course there are different dosages of statins that we would prescribe based on a person's picture. Now, when we're looking at the best statin, we're looking at removing, of course, the bad cholesterol or LDL. And among statins, we usually see, I believe, rosuvastatin or atorvastatin usually reducing LDL in higher quantities. But again, high-intensity statin therapy is only recommended when a person has a very high LDL cholesterol and if they have established heart disease or if they are at a high risk of heart attack or stroke. Now, there are other statins out there that can lower cholesterol, but what is most important is that the right choice of a statin, and again, this is going to be based on your picture and your doctor is going to determine the best choice, is your, of course, your LDL level and your cardiovascular risk, how well you're tolerating the medication, and if you have any other health conditions or if you're on any other medications as well.
Good day, doctor. Does eating too much flour cause constipation?
So when we're looking at flour and constipation is not just caused by one particular thing. It is caused by an accumulation of doing several different activities that will over time lead to impairment in your gut motility and your bowel movements. Now, flour itself can lead to constipation because, well, it's low in fiber, first of all, and fiber is definitely needed to add bulk to your stool and pulls water into the bowels. Now, flour is also something that slows down your gut movement, and it is something that is very heavy. So when you eat too much flour, that is going to displace better foods that you can be eating, like the vegetables and the fruits and the legumes. And of course, flour-heavy meals can also absorb water in the gut. So if your hydration is low, it becomes even harder and more difficult to pass stool.
All right, good afternoon, doctor. I'm 38 years old. My HDL cholesterol is high. It's at 48, where it should be under 40, and was put on rosuvastatin for 90 days. Would I have to continue taking this for life?
So if your HDL cholesterol is over 40, that should be a good thing because we want the HDL cholesterol to be high, and usually we would want it over 60. So I'm not too sure if this person is referring to their LDL cholesterol. Their LDL cholesterol may have been high for them to have been placed on the rosuvastatin. Now, being on it for life is going to depend on a multitude of different factors. Do you have any other existing medical conditions? Have you had a previous heart attack or a previous stroke? All of these things will matter when it comes to certain people being on medications for life, because if you have had a previous heart attack, more than likely you will be taking medications for life.
All right, folks, of course, 625-2257, 627-3223. All right, message us at 306-1065. Any of your medical questions, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Let's get back to some of our questions in our topic. Can someone have normal cholesterol but still be at a high risk of heart disease or stroke?
So, yes, remember I mentioned risk is not only about your cholesterol level. It is also about vascular damage over time. For example, somebody with long-standing high blood pressure can have injury to the arteries and stiffness even with having a normal cholesterol. Somebody with diabetes or prediabetes can have inflammation and plaque risk, even if their LDL cholesterol is okay. A strong family history of early heart disease can also raise suspicion that genetics may play a major role, and those patients are the ones that will usually benefit from deeper testing. Many people may also have normal LDL, but elevated lipoprotein A or high apolipoprotein B, meaning they may have more plaque-forming particles than their LDL cholesterol suggests alone. So many people, like I said, a lot of the younger persons or the younger generation these days tend to assume that because they're young, they're safe. But unfortunately, vascular disease actually begins very quietly in your 20s and your 30s, especially with the rise of vaping and even smoking, with the rise of this westernized diet that we have that is leading to obesity, the sedentary lifestyles that we live now, sleep apnea, and even uncontrolled stress. So the real question isn't really, is my cholesterol normal? It is, what exactly is my cardiovascular or overall cardiovascular risk, and how can I reduce it now?
And how do lifestyle factors like stress, sleep, and physical inactivity affect cholesterol and heart risk, even if labs look okay?
So stress or sleep inactivity can raise a person's heart risk through multiple different pathways if cholesterol appears acceptable. So chronic stress is something that elevates the hormones like the cortisol and the adrenaline, which can increase a person's blood pressure. It disrupts blood sugar control, and of course we know it just promotes overall inflammation in the body. Poor sleep is definitely and strongly, I would say, linked with insulin resistance and higher appetite hormones and higher blood pressure, and just worsening a person's metabolic profile over time. And physical inactivity actually reduces the body's ability to process those fats and those sugars efficiently. And that is what overall contributes to weight gain, higher triglycerides, and lower HDL. And many people just automatically assume once their labs are fine, especially once their cholesterol is fine, then stress and sleep don't or no longer matter. But they absolutely do matter, and they will often show up later as hypertension and diabetes and weight gain. And eventually, that is going to cascade into cardiovascular events. And I would say that lifestyle also influences the quality of LDL particles. So what I mean by that is that insulin resistance tends to increase small density LDL or small dense LDL, which is more likely to enter into the artery wall. So you will get these small microparticles, which we term SDLDL, and those are the ones that go into the tiny crevices of the artery wall, and that is definitely a major contributing factor to plaque buildup. So cholesterol really is just a snapshot, but lifestyle is the entire movie here, and your arteries respond to the movie, not just to one snapshot in the movie.
All right, for the persons that are calling, do call when we say to call with your questions, right? Do call when we say to call with your questions, because you won't be just cutting the doctor to answer your call. So wait till we say you can call, then you can call. Are genetics more important than diet when it comes to cholesterol and cardiovascular risk?
For some people, yes. And genetics can definitely be a major driver. So there are conditions like familial hypercholesterolemia that can cause very high LDL from a young age, and diet alone will not be sufficient to combat that. Lipoprotein A is another largely genetic factor that can raise risk even if somebody is eating well and exercising. And if you have a strong family history of early heart disease, like heart attacks in men under the age of 55 or women under the age of 65, then genetics should definitely be taken seriously. And that is usually what warrants earlier screening and more aggressive prevention in those individuals. But for many people, I would say that lifestyle still has the most powerful influence. Diet is what affects your triglyceride levels, and it does affect your LDL to some extent. It affects your body fat distribution. It affects your blood sugar, your blood pressure, and inflammation. And all of these things shape your overall risk. And just because I said that genetics is a major driver, that does not mean that anything that you do does not matter. Genetics, like I always say, loads the gun, but lifestyle is what pulls the trigger. And lifestyle can also be the safety switch. So even in the person that has a genetic risk, healthy living plus the right medical strategy can dramatically reduce events.
All right, folks, one more question before we get back to your calls and your questions. How early should people start paying attention to their cholesterol and heart health?
So I would say ideally in early adulthood, because plaque begins very silently and it will accumulate over time. And there are guidelines in terms of lipid screening in young adults. And of course, the earlier we would advise a person to be screened if there are risk factors that are involved. For example, obesity, diabetes, smoking, high blood pressure, or even a family history of early heart disease, or even a family history of high cholesterol. So the goal here is not really to scare people, but to establish a baseline and to catch major red flags early. It is so much easier to prevent plaque than it is to reverse any sort of advanced disease. And many people just tend to think that cholesterol is an issue only in an older person, but that's not the truth anymore. With the modern diets that we have, with the amount of stress that people experience on a daily basis, with the lack of restorative sleep and all the sleep disruptions that are just entering our lives now, and with the sedentary lifestyles, your metabolic risk is starting to show up earlier. So if a person is in their 20s or their 30s, I would say that it is important at this point to know your numbers. And that includes not just your blood pressure or your fasting glucose, but your A1C and your lipid numbers as well. You need to reduce any sort of alcohol intake. You need to not smoke or vape. You need to build some muscle, stay active, and protect your sleep like it is on an appointment with yourself. So those are the habits that will compound into decades of protection later on.
All right, well, speaking of sleep, a lot of people are not getting much sleep these days. So we'll see how that goes.
Yep.
All right. Doctor, some questions. Let's get your questions here. 625-2257, giving those callers who are calling a chance to call in right now. Now is the time to call. 627-3223. Or you can feel free to WhatsApp us at 3061065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5. All right, let's take that call. Hello, good afternoon.
A pleasant good day, Mr. Abiyato, and good day, Doc. Doc, I am 59 years old. About 3 years ago, I did a cholesterol test, and it came in low. And then recently, I did the next one, it came in low, didn't give any result. 3 times over in the last 4 years, I didn't get any result. It didn't read anything, low. So I don't know if I take it to some normal, the kind of the drugstore cholesterol machine. So I'll listen off here to give me some guidance then, huh? All right, bye.
So what I would say is that the point of care testing will not give you an accurate result. So I would suggest that you actually go and do a blood test where we look at the serum to get a more accurate result of your cholesterol panel. So, I mean, there are several reasons that it could have come in low. It could have just been a problem with the machine itself, or it could have been just the if you didn't eat before going, or if it couldn't pick up on any of the readings. But like I said, these machines vary. It's more for monitoring than it is for diagnosing a person with something. So the better bet is to go and get a blood test done by a doctor.
All right, somebody questioning here. The other day, doctor, I tested my blood sugar and also my blood pressure. Blood sugar was fine, a reading of 67. 97. And then my blood pressure was very high. It was 100. Top number was 167. They said it was even bordering hypertension. I don't eat much salt when I cook, but lately I've been eating other people's foods. What could probably be the some reasons for my blood pressure being so high?
So we tend to think that salt is the only reason that our pressure goes up, but the real reasons are usually hidden. So sometimes it could be a buildup of stress over time. It could be your cortisol just rising. And when your cortisol and adrenaline is risen in the body for an extended period of time, that is going to cause a lot of stress on the heart, which will in turn cause a lot of stress on the arteries, leading to high blood pressure. In addition to that, lack of sleep has been shown to be associated with high blood pressure because, like I always say, sleep is you plugging in yourself at night to recharge. And if you're not getting your restorative sleep, then your body is not accumulating and taking out that stress of the day before, and you're taking that into the next day. So your body is just in a constant state of unrest. In addition to that, there are many other factors that will contribute to high blood pressure, and that will also include if you have any other medical conditions as well. But stress is definitely something that we do see contributing to high blood pressure, in addition to just somebody eating the salty foods. But it's not just about the salty foods. It's also the highly refined processed carbohydrates and the lack of the proper nutrients in the body, as well as many people live a very sedentary lifestyle. So many people get less than 5,000 steps for the day. And that is a contributing factor to somebody getting or ending up in a hypertensive emergency or urgency, like the numbers that you were explaining to me.
All right, let's take a message here from, ask a question from Durbasa Trace.
Good afternoon, calling from Durbasa Trace in Pinal. I just heard the comment about family history and so on. And I get worried anytime I hear about family history and certain kinds of diseases that are also associated with lifestyle. As I have to ask the question, how important is lifestyle versus family history, where cholesterol issues and diabetes and heart attacks and so on are concerned? Thanks.
So, like I always say, genetics load the gun, but lifestyle is what pulls the trigger. I actually myself did some genetic testing a few weeks ago when I went to the States, and the way that they do the testing is that, yes, many people may have different genes in their bodies, and many people will have the same types of genes, but sometimes these genes can either have a high impact on the outcome of your life or a low impact on the outcome of your life, meaning that, you know, yes, it may take a lot for you to be able to express these. For myself, I have had every single gene for obesity, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes that have a very high impact on what my body can do or what my body can express. So if I didn't work out on a daily basis, if I was very sedentary, if I did not eat balanced meals in proper portions, then it was very easy for me to get high blood pressure, diabetes, become obese. All of these different things can be very easy to develop. But because I live a certain lifestyle, these things have not expressed themselves within my day-to-day life. So that's just a case study on me per se, but that is a big thing in terms of people thinking that genetics will determine their destiny. And I always say that your genetics are not your destiny, but there are certain genes that do give you a very high exponential risk of certain medical conditions. So when we're looking at breast cancer, we look at the BRCA genes, and we do know that that is definitely associated with a very high risk of breast cancer. But when we're looking at lifestyle, the only thing that I've really seen that puts a person at a very high risk of developing a metabolic disease like high cholesterol would possibly be familial hypercholesterolemia, where they have the genetics that just produce high cholesterol, and any sort of lifestyle intervention may be very difficult for them to even bring that down. So in those cases, then it is appropriate for them to be on statin therapy for life in some cases. But for the general scheme of things, your genetics are not your destiny in terms of lifestyle diseases. And you get to make the choice whether you express those genes or not.
All right, good afternoon. Cholesterol is 240. The recommended dose. Do the tabs remove plaque? My sugar in the morning is 106. Eat at 7 p.m. Is this good?
So each lab has their own range for cholesterol, but cholesterol level of 240 is usually clinically high, and it usually does mean that, you know, there is something within your cholesterol panel that is making it go that high. So like I said, your total cholesterol is one number, but if that is high, we definitely need to look at your HDL, your LDL, your triglycerides to see which one is at the highest risk of causing any sort of cardiovascular risk to you, to cause a heart attack, etc. Now, in terms of your fasting blood sugar, 106 is fine. We want to get it to below 100, but it's not within a pre-diabetic range. Now, if you eat, I would say, like, eating at night, it's not really a big issue unless you're eating very close to bedtime. So you want to eat your last meal usually about 3 hours before you go to bed.
More questions, 30 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Good afternoon, Bass and Doc. If a woman's womb drops and is put back in place, how long after can they do weight training or exercise?
So this is going to be a very individualized case, and this is something that you are going to have to discuss with your gynecologist, because every woman is different and every woman has a different risk in terms of why this would have happened to them. So that's something that is very individualized. But again, it should not be a problem once your doctor sees it fit.
Good day, Doc. My wife's been having constant chest pain for the past 4 months or more. She has been taking medication for acid reflux as prescribed by the doctor, but no relief. Could this be a HL hernia, all right? Or does she need to do an endoscopy to find the cause? Thanks much for your response.
So I would not be able to determine just from that if somebody will need an endoscopy or if it is a hiatal hernia. Now, what I will see is that a lot of heart issues can present in women, and it can present as acid reflux. So my best guess would be to carry her back to the doctor, make sure that they do any sort of heart panels. For example, let them do an ECG just to make sure that everything is good with the heart. And on top of that, if they still do not find any sort of issues, I wouldn't jump straight to endoscopy unless there's any sort of reason for endoscopy, because while it is a very helpful procedure, it can be a little invasive and it does come with its own risks. So that is, again, going to be determined by her medical history as well as any other symptoms or factors that will lead them to say, well, let us do an endoscopy. So if she was taking the OMEZ and the PPIs, which are usually given for acid reflux, then, and with that has given her no relief, that is something that she definitely needs to go back and get checked out.
Thank you for holding, caller.
Good afternoon. Dorbasa Trace here. You played my voice note. Doc, people see me and they hear me on these programs. And, of course, they know me for years of calling on radio. And they ask me, you know, what for further explanations and so on. And I tell them what I'm doing, and then they try to negotiate with me a softer position because I take hard lines. And I'm not qualified. I'm not trained. I can't give anybody a softer position. I'm following certain things that are working, and I'm checking with my doctor, and he's keeping me balanced and on an even track. And I tell him that's what you need to do. But it seems to me that people feel that if they have negotiating skills, they don't need to do the right thing. And I think dietitians and doctors and so on have to take a hard line. This is what you need to do, and you need to do as much of it as possible for as long as possible, and that's how you will be helped. But I think too many people negotiate with the patients. Thank you.
I agree with that. I feel like because of the lives that we live now, the things that we were supposed to do or meant to do seems very difficult or seems very hard. So even eating just some rice and vegetables and chicken, people will automatically think that you are dieting because we've normalized having fast foods and we've normalized drinking alcohol and we've normalized smoking. But not doing these things have become very abnormal, and that's not the right way to approach our health.
All right, let's get back to some more of our questions in the topic. Let's do this last WhatsApp message here. These are some readings. Triglycerides 44, HDL 60, LDL 42. My dad is 75 years old. These are his results. Can the doc tell me if these are good?
Yes, those sound very good, especially for somebody that is 75 years old. So your dad's doing pretty good, and people should take pattern from that.
All right, let's get back to some of our questions with our topic we were doing today, cholesterol. When should cholesterol be managed with lifestyle changes alone, and when is medication necessary?
So lifestyle is definitely the starting point for almost everyone. So just improving your diet quality, adding more fiber, less ultra-processed foods, increasing your activity on a daily basis, maintaining a healthy weight, addressing sleep issues and stress issues and smoking. Those are things that will definitely improve your bad cholesterol levels and, of course, improve your good cholesterol levels. Now, in the mild to moderate risk cases, lifestyle changes can meaningfully lower those LDL cholesterol and triglycerides, and it will often improve the entire risk profile. But if somebody has very high LDL, especially if it is persistent, if they have diabetes, if they have established heart disease, a strong family history, or genetic conditions like familial hypercholesterolemia, like I mentioned before, then medication may be recommended sooner because the risk of waiting is higher. And many people tend to think that if you go on statins, that's automatically bad. Or once you start cholesterol medication, you are going to be on it forever. And that is not the necessity. Remember, I said that it is determined based on your risk profile, based on your medical conditions. And medication is a tool. And in high-risk people, it can definitely be life-saving by lowering the chances of a heart attack or a stroke. That decision is very individualized, and it is really dependent on your overall risk, your age, your family history, blood pressure, smoking status, diabetes status, and sometimes even the tests for the hidden markers like the apolipoprotein B and the lipoprotein A, or your cardiac score. And all of these are going to be determined in terms of guiding your treatment plan. So I want people to use lifestyle as the base. And if medication is needed, you need to see it as a risk reduction, not as a failure.
And what are the common myths about cholesterol that may actually be putting people at risk?
So one of the big myths I hear is that high cholesterol always has some sort of symptom. It usually does not. It is silent, and that is why screening definitely matters. And many people believe that if your cholesterol is normal, you don't need to worry about heart disease. As I said before, risk is multifactorial. Another misconception is HDL cancels out the LDL, and we've discussed that already. It does not reliably cancel out your plaque risk. And one of the most dangerous myths is that natural supplements can replace proven therapy. Some supplements may help modestly, but they are not a guaranteed substitute for medication when your risk is high. And many people also believe that dietary cholesterol, like eggs, is the main cause of high cholesterol. For most people, saturated fats, refined carbs, excess calories, and genetics do play a larger role than dietary cholesterol alone. And the effect is going to vary from individual to individual. So not all fats are bad. The truth is, the type of fat really matters. So unsaturated fats like your olive oil and your nuts and your fish will generally support your heart health, but the excessive saturated and the trans fats can worsen your risk. So cholesterol is not a bad food versus good food issue. It is just long-term patterns and metabolic health and your personal risk as well.
And finally, if someone's listening wants to protect their heart long-term, what are the top things they should focus on beyond their cholesterol numbers?
So firstly, I will say to know your full set of vital numbers. So that will be your blood pressure, your A1C or fasting glucose, your waist circumference, your triglycerides, your HDL, your LDL, and ideally non-HDL cholesterol. And for some people, they may get their apolipoprotein and lipoprotein A done as well. Second, you want to protect the basics. So do not smoke, prioritize your sleep, manage stress, and move daily. Strength training plus regular walking is definitely one of those powerful tools and powerful combinations for your overall metabolic health. And thirdly, you want to eat for heart protection. So prioritize fiber through beans and vegetables and fruits and oats and lean protein sources and healthy fats, and reduce all the ultra-processed foods and the sugary drinks. And of course, be mindful with alcohol, especially with the carnival season coming up. And I want people to understand that prevention is very layered. So lifestyle, regular screening, and sometimes medication will be prescribed based on your risk. If you have a strong family history, you don't want to wait. You need to ask your doctor for a deeper assessment and whether they're doing tests like the apolipoprotein B or the lipoprotein A, or even a coronary calcium scan may be appropriate for some people. Now, prevention does not have to be complicated. It is just consistent habits plus the right medical follow-up. So keep your arteries healthy, keep your inflammation low, keep your blood pressure and blood sugar controlled, and you need to treat cholesterol as one important part of a much bigger protective strategy.
All right, Doc, well, that'll be it for our show for today. Thank you very much.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.